featuring Sage.
What do you think about Donald Trump?
I wonder how many of these people making these decisions are influenced by the children who fall under Generation Z.
I mean, their kids are just going to eat them, so it doesn't really.
That's what I'm saying.
Quality
that
was material.
The best tweet of all time.
What up, world? What up? Welcome to episode 100 of the Ameripodcast.
What? 100 triple digits. We made it.
Triple digits.
We made it. We made it. And we couldn't have done it without the fine help of you, dear listeners, and also our lovely guests today.
Oh, that was such a nice intro. For a second, I thought you were going to say, we could have never done it without you, dear listeners, or our dumbass president. But
it would not be wrong.
But really,
it would not be wrong. We have Jordan and Nelson back with us this evening. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hello. I'm happy to be a part of episode 100. I'll be honest. I was obviously very skeptical when you guys started this podcast, and I'm proud of you boys sticking to it.
Right.
That's right. We too were skeptical, so we do not blame you.
Do you guys hear the baby? The baby's coming. Hey. Oh, good night, sweetie.
Oh, good night, Sage.
We love you, Sage.
Thank you, Sage. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us this evening.
She's going to cry now because she saw me.
Oh. Listeners, that was the little dictator, a.k.a. Jordan's daughter. She will be your benevolent leader here soon. I hope you enjoy.
Once we colonize Mars or whatever it is that we're going to do.
Planet party party.
Planet. You know what? I walked around the airport the other day while we were talking, and I kept trying to get her to say party party. I didn't have any success. It's like party party. And she'd be like potty. And I'm like, no, not potty. Party party.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
That is some solid parenting.
Solid
right
parenting.
There.
I mean, what more parenting. Did you ask for?
So,
Blake, do you want to let everybody know what we're doing today?
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. It's the first time I think we've had six people on one episode. So we have the Modelo guardrails up. And
for a few minutes at least.
The guardrails sponsored by Modelo. Sponsor us, please. We'll read your ads.
Right. You know what that means, though, you guys. That means we're going to be on point tonight. I wanted to thank Jordan Scruggs and Nelson Parrish for joining us this evening from the East Coast, Jordan. How are you tonight?
Thank you. I'm so happy to be with you all. I'm doing well. I feel honored to be a part of the 100th episode.
Yeah, I'm glad we could all make it. Thank you. And thank you for being a part of this ridiculous journey for the last couple of years.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine.
Good, I hope so. Holy moly.
Yes.
Fluffy, I knew you had your doubts, but I'm equally happy that you could be here this evening. Thank you. Nelson Parrish, Colorado.
I'm happy to be here. I'm really just in it for the group texts.
I'm only here for the group text.
You slut.
Yeah. Listeners, maybe if you're good listeners, we'll just release our group texts and our Slack channel, and it'll just be bonus content for you. You'll love it.
It's amazing stuff. Yep.
It's pretty fun.
It's amazing.
Mr. Bonus Content out in Oakland, California, Tyler Grillo. Hello, sir. How are you this evening?
Hey. I'm here, and you got my location and city correct. It's a whole new decade. It's
no.
A whole new series of episodes. Here we are.
Yeah, you know, it only took me a train visit to get it accurate, right?
That's right.
And out here in Colorado with me, Mr. John Kelly. How are you this evening, sir?
Doing well. Glad to be back.
Wearing a snowflake shirt.
Yes. Powder days. Hoping for some more snow out here.
Oh, okay.
That's an amazing...
The aspirational tea.
I'm actually the snowflake of this pod. People probably know that after 100 episodes. pointing out my secrets to the listeners.
You know, you're wearing it so well, and I wanted to acknowledge everything that you were bringing to the table this evening.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. It's nice to have you back. You've always been a great guest.
The snowflake.
Yeah.
And that compliments our goals. I think we're trying to get some video going here in the future, as we've been talking about for a minute. But then you'll be able to see these things like Kelly's t-shirt.
The future is here. The future is now.
The future is here. And Mr. Anderson, Mr. Future Man himself, John Anderson in the mountains.
Oh, hey.
Good evening.
How are you and everybody? I hope everybody is, you know. Does everybody have their bunkers prepared for World War III? It's going to be fun.
Our bunkers. There's no bunker emoji.
Oh, yeah, we need a bunker emoji.
How are we supposed to communicate only via picture?
Yeah, we need to write emojis and be like, we need apocalypse.
It's a new category.
Style emojis.
Apocalyptic emojis.
Yeah.
It's okay. We actually.
You got a new category at the bottom. It'll just be a mushroom cloud.
I'm about to Google apocalypse emojis right now because I feel like somebody's done this.
I'm telling you, Google's already translated this conversation. They picked up on it. They already know.
Oh, good. Well, our future benevolent corporate overlords will give us the emojis we need.
Good. Oh, making it real.
Like, what are we doing today? What are we doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what brings us here today? We are here to discuss the greatest moments and the most terrible moments, our fears, hopes, dreams, the romantic comedies, you name it, of the Trump administration.
Romantic comedies.
Maybe not that, but...
Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, she loved him.
Yep. At, like, the Red Inn, and she, like, falls in love with one of the waiters there. Hell yeah. Hey, I'd watch that shit.
There was some romance going on in the FBI. We all know this now. But,
writes itself.
We going scary first?
The scariest moment of the Trump administration.
I'm going to kick this off.
Boom.
I'm kick it off from
yeah,
there
scary.
To Mr. Anderson.
Yeah.
Mr. Anderson.
So, first of all, I know this is going to be a rough transition. I realized I did not do my fun fact for this episode. So, just real quick.
Oh.
I want you guys to know that the sum of the first 9 prime numbers is 100. Yeah, baby. Yep. In honor of episode 100, my 1-for-101 is better and mathier. So everybody, little tease for next
wow.
week's episode.
Strap in tight for that one.
It's gonna be, yo, it involves the words both concatenate and palindrome. So bring it on, motherfuckers.
Okay, well, now I am excited. So
yeah, it's
okay.
gonna be great. Anyways, you'll have to tune in next week. Okay, well, anyways.
So scariest moments.
Scariest moments. I will say that I convened a list of this, and it's a pretty long list, and I have to admit that I forgot shit, like really terrible shit that I had to go back and add to this list.
Yeah.
But in homage to recency bias, I would like to say that my scariest moment is the Soleimani assassination. I think this is
good call.
The one of the possible worst case scenarios we envision with Trump, which is committing a very, very stupid act in foreign policy that stumbles us into a regional war in the Middle East. So, as we record today, we saw that a dozen rockets from Iran were fired at a U.S. A base housing U.S. personnel in Iraq. I consider us in a state of war with Iran until I am proven otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. Once missiles are exchanged like they've been, how is that not war, right?
Well, we've been in a low-level war with Iran for a number of years. They contributed a lot to our casualties in Iraq. There have been cyber attacks and such on both sides. But this is... There's no equivalent in our country for the position that Soleimani held, but he can be thought of as the second most powerful person in Iran. So it's almost like he's kind of like if the vice president basically if like Mike, if you combine Mike Pence and David Petraeus. And so we assassinated that
guy. Yeah, it's a good comparison.
And like, that's a huge deal. If Iran had assassinated Mike Pence or David Petraeus, we would be carpet bombing Tehran right now. So
yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, we would be.
So I think we have been in low-level conflict with Iran for, you know, almost, well, it depends on where you start the clock. But you can really start the clock in 79. Right. Or even before then. But this, I think, signifies a new escalated and much scarier stage of the conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, John. I wanted to touch on the fact that what you're saying is really true. There's been it's basically a proxy war in the Middle East between the United States influence and Iranian influence that has developed for basically 40 or 50 years. And it's potentially coming to a head at this moment, mainly because of what I would call a blunder in foreign policy and a politically driven one to try to help Trump's image in the United States.
Yeah.
Image in the United States being the fact that he might be like digging around for something to boost his ratings in the polls and his support and approval.
Yes. Yeah, before going into impeachment with the Senate trial.
Tyler.
You know, should I raise my hand? Do I need to raise my hand to jump in here?
Go ahead, Jordan.
Can I?
Yeah, get it, girl.
I was literally just watching a rerun of one of the late night shows. I'm thinking it was Trevor Noah, and they played footage of Trump from
2011.
Oh, was it 2011? Where he's talking about like,
I think
if
it was before the 2012 election.
I'm pretty sure it happened in 2012 though. They said 2012 on the. I know they said 2012, but maybe it was 2011. Maybe they were wrong.
Well, fact not check everyone this. We'll look it up.
Not everyone knows as much as John Anderson does, so everyone. But basically, it's Trump saying like, if I were Obama and I wanted to be reelected, I would start a war with Iran. Like he says it verbatim, like 12 times. And he like even offers scenarios. And he's like, if I didn't think I could be reelected, this is exactly what I'd do. And I think it's the move of a desperate man.
Mm. Yeah, so, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what's happening here, right?
Like, absolutely.
That's what's so awful.
Did everybody see that there was reporting that, so what the military has been doing when they offer Trump options on like military strikes or whatever, they'll put a really extreme option on there so that he looks at the other options and they're more palatable to him. So they like do a little fake out, right? Mattis, when he was there, forbid doing that. But Mattis is no longer there. So they put the Soleimani strike as options on the list so that he wouldn't do it, and he took it.
Wow.
So this was done, it looks like, at Mar-a-Lago with very little thinking. There was a great article in The New Yorker that says, the headline was something like, Trump plays chess one move at a time. And that's what's going on here. So he was like, yeah, that strike sounds like a great idea. Boom. And then did not think of the consequences of like, oh yeah, now we're going to go to war and Iraq is going to kick us out of their country and we're going to get an Iranian bomb now and blah, blah, blah. They did not think through any of the second or third order consequences. And that's how some damn fool thing in the Middle East gets us into a large war.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like you guys saw the Simpsons movie, right? They elected Rainier Wolfcastle to be president of the United States. And goes, I was elected to lead, not to read. And he just points, I want another free.
That's basically what's happening. I mean, I have so much to say about this. I agree with everything that's been said. It's definitely a political move. It's also a really stupid move. I think one thing I've emphasized is like, you can't, there's no, this is one of those situations where you can't be like, well, they did this to us. And because if you look actually what was happening recently, if you like trace it back, you can just trace it back to, again, it depends on when you start, but at least in the late 70s, if not the 50s, of how long these things have been happening. And the thing is that this is it's a very long time. And so it's not to say like, you know, that there was, you know, what Soleimani did was also have these militias, right, in Iraq, and one of them was responsible for barricading the U.S. embassy. I don't think anyone died or was even injured, but it was like this big thing. This was the retaliation to that, which there were retaliating to something else in this whole thing. But the point is that this is an extreme escalation, right? To go from, I think there was either maybe a few casualties of that at a place that's not a military base, right? It's an embassy, right? It's where, I mean, they stormed it, which you're not allowed to do, right? But to go to that, to killing the second in command, is a huge escalation. And so I think that's really important to note. And I think the other thing to always say is just like, it's going to be the civilians and the poor people who are going to wage the brunt of this and lose, and powerful people 100%. Are probably going to find ways to make money, and no war ever, and especially not in Iran.
I mean, that is, let's be honest here, that is definitely one of Donald Trump's thoughts, right, going into this, is he's trying to secure his position of power and make some money, some profit, because I mean, let's face it, once he's out of the office, I really think he's going to be locked up for the crimes that his administration has committed.
Yeah, and he has threatened more, like threatening war crimes
exactly
against Iranian
oral sites. Oh, God.
Also, I mean, I feel like he has crossed some humanitarian lines as well with the children on the border and the psychological, mental damage he's done to so many children. You know, that's got to fall.
Is that your scariest moment? Is that your scariest moment?
It was on my list.
Yeah, actually, I didn't mean for that to happen, but I would say that is one of the scariest. And so, yeah, I'll call it as mine. Yeah, that's fine, for sure. That wasn't my first, but I'll hold my first so I don't ruin anybody else's. It's just kind of a really... It's a catastrophe, and I feel it falls under humanitarian crisis, and that it will come back to bite Donald Trump in the ass for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree. It's inhuman. The treatment is completely inhuman. But you know, the fact that I think Trump believes this too, but certainly the people that he surrounds himself in the White House thinks about people from Central and South America is less than human, and it shows in their policies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
May I ask a question,
Jordan?
Yes.
Man, we all talked about raising our hands. I don't know. I'm the only person
that was great.
So far.
No, it was good form.
So, okay. So I was talking to Kevin about this the other day, and I honestly don't know the answer. He didn't sound like he did either. What is, I don't think there's any precedent. So like a sitting president can be impeached, but they can't face criminal charges. So after a president has been impeached, presumably if it's upheld by both houses of Congress.
You're talking about impeachment and removal, correct?
Yes.
Because impeachment is just the indictment.
Right.
So
sorry,
when you say he's been impeached, that's just the indictment. Then he must be removed.
And then he's removed from office. Right. And so if he's removed from office, then can criminal charges be brought against him?
Yes.
Is that the, okay, but there's no like precedent for that, is there? I mean, Nixon resigned from office, but
was pardoned by Ford.
Right.
They were going to bring criminal charges, and then Ford pardoned him and prevented that.
Because do you honestly think, because I don't think that Donald Trump is going to spend a day of his life in prison. I don't think he'll spend a day in his life in prison ever.
Here's what's really interesting about that is that I think he's likely facing criminal charges on multiple levels, both federal and state level, unlike any sitting president before him has ever stared at that in the face. And so if he's impeached and then tried and convicted in the Senate and removed from office, it's a legal gray area what they could do federally to him, one, and two, whether there'd be any political will to do so for federal crimes.
Right.
He's still standing probably trial for state crimes in New York.
In New York, he is.
As well.
Yeah, he is, that's right.
As soon as he's done being president, I think that he'll get charges brought against him by district attorneys in New York. What I think when it comes down to the most interesting question in my mind constitutionally is that there's nothing in the Constitution, if you're removed from office, that you can't run again. And this would be like a future scary thing, right? But he has enough base of support that even if the Republicans somehow changed their mind in the Senate and there was a 2/3 vote that actually removed him from office, he could just run again next year.
Yeah.
And could be elected president again.
That's so awful.
And I think that Republicans have done that calculation and that's why they've stuck by him. Because it will split the party and destroy the party. And they will never win another election. But we should probably get back to our scariest moments.
Yeah, who's next, Jordan?
Is it me?
Does anything?
Could be.
It can be me.
Bippity boppity boo.
Oh my god. You know, for me, I think the scariest. I think there's something to be said for sort of like the cumulative effect of. Just never knowing what you're going to wake up to in the morning or what, you know, our president is going to tweet from his porcelain throne at 3 a.m. and I think I stopped being absolutely horrified. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, today's current events are, you know, we were kind of messaging back and forth. It's like, I feel like this could be like the thing that we've all been kind of waiting for it to happen since the beginning of the Trump presidency. Like, this is the thing that's going to get a lot of people killed. Like, a lot of people killed. Not just traumatized, right? Not to say just traumatized. Trauma is awful, but people are walking to they're being sent to their death right now on behalf of a president who is afraid that he's not going to be reelected. And so he's taking a gamble on starting a war. but I think I stopped being like nauseous every time I read about something in the paper, right after all of the kids started being taken from their parents, because emotionally I could not allow myself to process stuff anymore. Because I was making myself physically sick reading the news all the time. So I guess the most shocking thing for me, because after the information came out about, you know, like the whole grab her by the pussy thing. After that happened, there was still sort of a buildup of tension. But when the American public's response to that revelation was like, well, it's not great, but it's not a deal breaker kind of thing. I think that for me was like, it was scary because it wasn't. Women encounter people like Donald Trump all the time. And I guess guys do too, but in a different way. Like, we encounter people like Donald Trump all the time. But the fact that the American public acquiesced so readily to that kind of toxic masculine behavior, for me, was like, something scary is happening here. And so even though since that time, there's been, like I said, like an accumulation of all of this other really horrific, horrifying stuff. I think for me, there was that moment let me know there's something different about what is happening here. And the fact that our, you know what I mean? It's like, we did like this crazy, like whiplash. I think, was it Van Jones that called it white lash? Is that what you called it? It was something like that.
It sounds right. Yeah,
that's happening in our country, where it's not only racial, but it's also gendered, right? And to see this, just, I mean, Barack Obama. I think we need to acknowledge this. Like, Barack Obama did things in office that would be considered war crimes, right? And so it's not that there's ever been a sitting president, and that's part of the reason why you can't. You can't prosecute somebody who is a sitting president, because presidents are put in impossible situations where they do things that are inhuman, right? And the best thing that we can hope for, at least in my mind, is that our president is smarter than we are, is more judicious than we are, and really tries to act in the best interest of the entire American public, and the entire American public when they make really, really difficult decisions. And so I think we need to be careful about saying that, like, Donald Trump is the only,
I don't think anybody has, but I think there's this thing that Democrats dance around right now where it's like, oh, Democrats would never do this kind of thing. It's like, no, they've done it a lot, right? It's right. just that, like,
right.
there's this, like, garish, in-your-face quality about the things that he does where he just doesn't care how awful he is, that he's totally self-interested, and everything that he does is in his own self-interest. And John has his hand up. Do you need to speak?
I didn't want to interrupt. You're doing.
I was
thoroughly enjoying.
Just a good cue. Just a good cue that he's got something on his mind.
Yeah, I was just like, something. I want to take the table at some point.
Do you want to?
Yeah, no. You take the table. I think I've got.
Well, no, I think Tyler had his hand up too, and now I've gotten distracted.
Tyler,
okay. Great. I'll go first. So then John gets to be awkward, and I can just say what I want to say. I totally agree with that, Jordan, and I feel like it's at that moment, like, I mean, for sure the like hot mic grabbed by the pussy moment, but also like all of the allegations of assault and rape that have come out against
him.
And like,
I think we're up to 19.
It's
they don't care. Republicans don't care. They just don't care.
And I hadn't thought of it actually until someone you were saying, Jordan. It's almost like the American public like acquiesced in the way that like to an abuser. You know, we're like, okay, you know, like we're gonna take it, like kind of. And it's really fucked, you know?
Well, the Republican Party certainly did.
Yeah.
Oh man, that is a messed up way of looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do agree that, you know, like the drone campaign from Barack Obama was a continuation of what George Bush did and in the fight on war on terror. And you can definitely make an argument that those were war crimes. But I think, and, you know, we saw this argument with the kids in cages too, where you had a bunch of people on the right being like, well, Barack Obama did the same thing. And you're like, okay. So like in the words that you're saying, sure, we can say like Barack Obama also put kids in cages, but the situation and circumstances under which that happened are so vastly different, and the magnitude of it is so vastly different that it is almost difference in kind and not only in degree. And so, and we're seeing this with Iran, right? Where, like, you know, Bill Clinton launched some missiles at Iraq before an election, and everybody was arguing with him about wagging the dog. Everybody was mad about wagging the dog, but it wasn't like he assassinated the second most important person in Iraq.
Right.
And so I think it's just important. I think that as Democrats, we kind of like fall into a trap of being like, yeah, no, I agree that like Barack Obama was also bad. But, and so I want to like,
the one-to-one comparison.
It's not one-to-one, and we always fall into the one-to-one, and it's a propaganda technique that the Russians use and that the right uses. And so I think it's just important that we acknowledge, yes, that like there are similarities there, but it is such difference that it is almost not the same.
Well, I'm just to respond to that, John, yes, I agree with you. And I think for me, the major, and maybe I didn't articulate this as well as I could have, the major difference for me it is who is being served, right? Mm-hmm. By this person's decision. Is it the American public weighing all these other options, right? And trying to make the best, because you're representing millions of people, right? And that doesn't mean you represent millions of people, but some people you represent more than others because you have shared ideological values, and that's how you got elected, right? Y'all get that. But
unfortunately, that's politics across the board.
Right.
I am just going to play devil's advocate for a second
and
say that, because it is a point to be made, but continue.
Yeah, but sorry. But the thing with Trump is that he's so brazenly self-interested, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And like Barack Obama, of course he's politicking because he's a president, right? Across the board, people do that. But I never felt like when he made a decision that I disagreed with, that he hadn't approached it very thoughtfully and with great care and concern and consideration for all parties involved. And so even
That's
if someone
awesome
was hurt, it was a calculation. And with Donald Trump, totally. He just doesn't care. He just doesn't care about anyone but himself or the people that are his constituents and who is going to get him reelected. And honestly, he doesn't even, let me be clear. He doesn't even care about his, like, he doesn't even care about his constituents insofar as their personal well-being. He cares about what they can do for him to help him get reelected. And that's truly disgusting to me that he is so self-serving.
Yeah. I think it was one of the tragedies, the deep, deep tragedies of this whole experience that we've been undergoing, is that the communities that need him most are his, in a lot of ways, not universally so, are his constituents. Like, look at people suffering under the opioid crisis in Ohio who voted for him.
That's right. That's right.
I find to be such a tragedy because he gave zero shits about them always. And
it was like a tip of the hat on the side of everything he was doing to be like, this is really my main focus, but don't forget about the opioid crisis. We're going to solve that too.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
isn't Jared in charge of that as well?
Probably.
Jared.
Kushdog's in charge of everything, man.
I haven't seen a lot about Jared recently.
Yeah, Jared's in charge. I've said it before. I'll say it again.
Middle East Peace Initiative.
He's in charge of all the things that Trump doesn't want to get done. This is. Is real Palestine. Anyways. Hey, Nelson.
Yep.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Oh, I was about to take that a little bit deeper, but I don't think I'm going to do that at this one. Should I name mine? Or do one of you guys want to go with your?
Can I just make a comment? Yeah. Fluffy had one too. So on that subject, so let's get Fluffy in here. Fluffy.
So I wanted to jump in here because I wanted to piggyback off of Jordan's because mine's kind of similar, far less well thought out, and but I can't say that I have any one particular moment that I would say is my scariest moment. It is the accumulation. It is the latest tweet is the scariest thing that's happened so far. And
just the next thing.
Just like whatever is about to happen is the next scariest thing that's taken place.
That's such a good one.
And to Jordan's point, just kind of his brazen attitude and his numbing of the American public to his attitude and his demeanor. I mean, the fact that we've accepted and just ignored the things that he says and does.
Yeah.
And that's just who he is. And they're just like, well, that's just Trump being Trump. And it's, and it's also a terrible person saying terrible things. Yeah,
with terrible consequences.
As the president of the United States. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a level of apathy when it happens in your own personal life that should be questionable to what you do on a daily basis when you see people interacting with each other. But when it's the president of the United States and he's saying horrible things and you have an apathy to it just because, it's just what he does, then that's time to look inward and readdress what you think your true values are, right?
And if I may just piggyback on this too for a second while it's appropriate, because I wanted to get this in earlier, but humans are creatures of habit, right? And if you see how they are acting or behaving in one field, it's very likely that they will carry those same traits on with other tasks. And that goes for a lot of different situations and attitudes and responses to the actions, you know, the reactions to the actions. And I think that it's okay to be able to say, okay, well, this is a pattern behavior and this is likely to happen again in this kind of situation. Fluffy, did I interrupt your
that really concludes my kind of scariest moment. I mean, it's not one particular thing. I mean, the day that he won the election might be the scariest moment, but it's just compounded from there. I mean, it is just, it's a building and growing thing.
I mean, we were talking about it before. I think before we even started that we're all in just a bizarro universe anyway. Like, it started before he even got elected that we all got spun off.
I cannot describe to you guys how much I hate this timeline that we live in. Like, it's the worst. Fucking worst. It really is. It was like designed. It is the strongest evidence that we live in a computer simulation. that I can think of. Because they were just like, this show is boring. Let's turn it up. It's fucking worst.
John, wait, are you telling us that this is how you play The Sims?
No, I play like a benevolent dictator. No, actually, no. I like building the houses. That's fun.
Oh my god. Kelly, you've been wanting to get in here for a while.
Yes, yeah, I'm gonna go a little farther back in his presidency because I think everything you guys have said has been really spot on. And the day to day is really difficult. But I think at least unless it changes quickly, my scariest thing that he did was pull us out of the Paris Climate Agreements and basically start slashing environmental regulations across the board.
That's
the scariest to me because doing the type of research and reading that I have about the climate crisis that is impending upon all of us in the next 30 years, 60 years, 100 years, there's really no time to waste in terms of acting against it.
Yeah.
And he is not taking us back a couple years by doing that and by allowing the thought process back into the American populace that it's okay to question science, right? Yeah. That it's bringing us back 30 years in terms of what other countries are already trying to do. But since we're already one of the top three emitters of greenhouse gas emissions, it depends on how you calculate that number, doesn't matter. We're still probably the highest on the planet because of our consumption. That it is really screwing generations of people, not only in the United States, but around the planet by having that type of attitude and by pushing it forward.
I just want to comment on that. What Kelly's referencing is like pollution numbers versus weighed against population, like density in areas.
Right.
And the United States is the most wasteful, yes. Yes, there may be more pollution coming from like Asia, but if you consider the number of people there emitting that pollution compared to how many people in the United States consume and pollute, the number's far greater here in the United States.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
And we're seeing the consequences of that in Australia right now, where an estimated 1 billion animals have died recently.
And it was just released today that they're going to kill like 10,000 camels in the outback because they drink too much water.
What?
What?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
So that's my scariest. Sorry.
Yeah. But, hey, Tyler.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Nelson. As an aficionado of the automobile and automobile television.
Oh, Christ.
Even the three hosts of Top Gear UK and now the Grand Tour have come out and admitted that climate change is real and that it's something that needs to be addressed. And so I think that's a pretty big step.
Yeah.
I actually 100% agree. I 100% agree that there are more and more people that are realizing that it's an issue. And it's not just the automobile industry that it's an issue with. It's so much about daily life and how you consume just about everything that you get. It has a carbon footprint, and that's what you're dealing with when you try to basically, if we want to think about not turning the world to 6 to 8 to 10 degrees Celsius by the end of this century, it means across the board cutting carbon footprints. Not just one person. Yeah. Unfortunately, it takes away, like you were saying, it'll take away a lot of opportunity for people to enjoy certain aspects of what has been built up, right, with technology. Unfortunately, it will. And unless there's a better way to store energy for batteries for cars in the long term, it may not. That even driving industry might be super affected. At the end of the day, if you're really talking about cutting everything that we need to. But I was glad to hear that. And I'm glad you brought it up because it's a fun show. It's a fun show.
I wonder how many of these people making these decisions are influenced by their children who fall under Generation Z.
I mean, they're just, their kids are just going to eat them, so it doesn't really
matter. That's what I'm saying.
Quality
that
was material.
The best tweet of all time. God, let me see if I can find that while we're...
No, but I agree, Kelly. And yeah, I mean, it's, I'm gonna say mine here, man, but it's, you know, it's something that I think is really scary too. Now, like out here in Northern California, wildfires, and here in the Bay, having to wear a mask when you go outside for, you know, a few weeks out of the year is the normal thing. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's scary.
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
A tweet. Baby boomers, this gender ideology is so confusing. Generation X, I love my Keurig and plays Nirvana. Millennials, shut the fuck up and start sequestering carbon and fighting fossil capitalism, or Generation E will literally eat you, or Generation Z will literally eat you. Generation Z will fucking eat all of you.
We'll fucking eat you.
Yeah, you,
I was totally
that?
Making best reference tweet of all to that time. A couple pods ago. It's so good. So
yes,
good.
It's so good.
Where did you find that?
Listeners... it's on Twitter. Listeners, that's a little peek into our Slack channel. So if you want more of that content, please leave us a comment on Facebook.
Publish in the Slack channel.
Tyler, we need your scariest. We need your scariest.
Okay, well, you know, scariest is hard. Scariest is hard, right? Because, like, so many scary moments in so many different ways. Like, what part of yourself do you want? Your heart to get scared? Your gut? Your brain? Like, you know, your ass? It all depends. But for me, one of the things that, like, viscerally scared me the most, so is the one I chose, is when Trump said after the riots in Charlottesville, when he said there are good people on both sides.
Yes.
Yep.
That was horrifying. So terrifying to legitimize white nationalism and like on a public stage. And they tried to walk it back, and then he unwalked it back, and it was just like it was just gross and scary and
appalling.
That's
appalling.
Like the closest you feel to like civil war.
Yeah.
Like civil war could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Fuck Nazis.
God, that was at the beginning of his presidency, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're dealing with over the last 3 years.
Yeah. Yep. It was like July or August.
Can I share with you guys all the things on my list that we did not mention?
Sure.
Yeah.
Go for
please
it.
Do.
I've got a couple too,
John. I've got a couple too.
Comey's firing. We did not mention that at all. That started the Mueller investigation, and we did not mention that at all. The inauguration
is crazy.
Yeah. His inauguration speech, which was one of the most horrifying moments of for me personally. I remember moving out of my little cottage in Boulder. My mom was like staying over helping me pack. My house was almost fully like torn apart, and we just had my TV up watching it. We were both on the couch just like, and I remember just being like, this is fucking fascist nonsense that is coming to America if this man gets elected.
100%. 100%.
By your mom, you mean the Pam.
The Pam.
Yes.
The Pam.
His convention speech where he mentioned American carnage. Horrifying. We also did not mention that. The Putin Trump press conference. Did not mention that at all.
God, it's so amazing.
I got
it. Like, listening to this, like, all of these things are so horrifying.
I literally day drank that day on like a Monday, and then 2 days later got a dog because I was so fucking freaked out.
I remember texting you doing that because I was doing the same thing. Like, what is happening right now? What am I watching?
I put it on at like 10 a.m. and was trying to work and was just like, fuck all of this. And I was laying on my fucking futon at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, buzzed, being like, something in my life needs to change. I'm turning 30. This is bad. And then 2 days later, I got a dog.
Nice.
Abby fixes everything.
Abby is the best. All of the North Korea posturing. Remember, like, Little Man and all of that shit when we almost went to nuclear war with North Korea?
Still
a question mark. Who knows what's going to happen to that? They just started more testing. So
great.
Just saying.
Yes, they did.
Oh, I got one for you. The Muslim ban.
The Muslim ban.
Jesus.
Which was not on my list, and neither was the Paris climate. I didn't have the Paris climate on my list because I forgot. Fucking John, insane.
I know. I love it. I love it. Tyler, I'm glad you said the Muslim ban because that was on mine. I had two more. I had two more on mine.
Jesus Christ.
And these are more bigger ones than just like specific things. They kind of at least the second one that I'm going to say fits into what I'll say it first actually. Undermining our allies in NATO and threatening the global system.
That's a great one.
That has to do with the Putin report. Has to do with his complete screw ups in North Korea, in my opinion, and what we're doing right now in Iran. And then the other thing I was going to say was just the continued unprecedented attacks on the press and free speech in this country, which he seems on a daily basis.
Dude, I mean, you also remember when he let, what's his name, dictator of Turkey beat up people on American soil?
His bodyguard.
And then betrayed our best allies in the Middle East, the Kurds. We also didn't mention that.
Yeah, that. Jeez. All right, we got to stop. We got to get to funniest now because
we have a couple minutes of palate cleansing funny or try to be funny at the end of this.
I gotta be honest, this has been incredibly depressing so far, and I was trying to rush us through because I couldn't handle continuing to talk about this.
As much as I would love to do happy, we're at a pretty good length right now as far as podcast time goes. That said, I'm going to cut us here, and we will be back relatively soon with the second half of this podcast. Jordan, Nelson, thank you. Hang tight. We'll record the second half. Listeners, much love.
Funniest moments, if there are any. You'll have to tune back in, see if there is.
Funniest moments coming up. Coming up next.
You need this palate cleanser. You need it.
It's going to be hot. It's going to be hot. Thanks for listening. Give us a like.
Listeners, I'm also really sorry about the depressing nature of the previous episode, but please tune in for the next one because it'll be funny.
Peace.
Godspeed, everybody.
Yes!